So thanks very much for taking the time to be interviewed by Global Voices online. I've been following your project.com, but I think it would be a good way to start for you to introduce yourself and also your project.
Well, my name is Elizabeth Metro, and I am the program director for .com, which is sponsored by the Department of State and implemented by PH International. And .com is an initiative that was developed to get young people from Azerbaijan, Armenia, and across the United States talking about the use of social media and media literacy and how you can inject your voice into conversations in your communities and schools and so forth using social media in a really compelling way. The students through the program have been blogging, using Twitter and Facebook and all those very popular Web 2.0 programs, and have really formed some incredible relationships and talked about some pretty heated topics, obviously, with Armenia and Azerbaijan. Some of those have centered on politics and that sort of thing. But by and large, they're discussing social issues that are universal, that affect teenagers all around the world. And then over the course of the program, as we really identified the top students in each country, we took those top 10 and brought them together in Vermont for a month of media literacy training and teaching students how to create socially conscious short films and media. And they spent the month and had just an incredible experience doing that, and are now taking the films that they have created and really leveraging those to implement civic action projects in their home communities. And then all the students, those same 30, will join up together in Azerbaijan, Armenia, and the Republic of Georgia next year. So a very long description of the program, but it's really interesting, and it's been a joy to work with the students.
So when you say to actually implement civic initiatives in their home countries, what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, great example. Some of the students are working on, or a couple of groups of students, films on global climate change and environmental issues, that sort of thing. In their home communities, they don't currently have recycling programs or anything set up, any kind of education in their schools. So they're going to be writing up, it's still all in development because they're collaborating right now to figure out exactly what their niche is going to be, but to develop these projects, and then they'll come to me with their ideas, and depending on how strong their proposal is, they'll get funding to then implement. So they'll have, essentially, in theory, they could have 3 different recycling projects, if that was their topic, in Baku, Yerevan, and Los Angeles that would all be getting funded through PH International and the State Department that they could collaborate on.
And not necessarily would those initiatives have to be online?
No. The idea would be that they would be collaborating online. They would be sharing their successes, their challenges, that kind of thing online. But no, they don't necessarily have to be.
So what sort of things did they get up to in Vermont? I mean, they were learning new skills. I guess you mean like filmmaking and filmmaking,
that kind of thing. It was a really intense month. We started off in D.C. and had actually just the Armenians and the Americans, because the Azerbaijanis had visa difficulties, so they came in a little bit late. But worked with NPR and the State Department to kind of get a handle on some different project ideas that they could do and how to use media as a real foundation for that, how to get their messages out using the media. And then they all came together in Vermont, and we divided them into groups of 3. So 1 Armenian, 1 Azerbaijani, and 1 American student on certain topics. So we had a group that was interested in gender issues, and so we had 3 students involved in making a short film about gender and gender stereotyping, that kind of thing. Conflict also was a really hot topic, as I'm sure you can gather. So we had a couple of groups that were doing peace and conflict issues and talking about how they can use their voice in their home communities in that respect. So that was the – so every day they were involved in filmmaking, interviewing people, visiting media stations and that kind of thing, and doing a lot of research. A lot of it was just learning how to engage in dialogue, learning how to really talk about these issues and do it in a way that's respectful, that honors different perspectives, and that where you really learn how to agree to disagree, because there's a skill in that. And I think for young people, it's especially important.
I mean, yeah, I mean, just the many people, when they hear that an Armenian and an Azerbaijani and an American were put together in a team, they would instantly think this isn't going to work. I mean, how do you think that it's worked out in the end?
I had those moments where I would have been one of those people that said, oh, this is not going to work. And even after we were into it for a week or so, where sometimes you just think that there is no way that these students are going to find consensus. And, I mean, we had a couple of sessions. You know, initially when you're doing a program like this, and my background is with Israelis and Palestinians, actually, and having worked in the Middle East in conflict situations. And, you know, you work in those situations and you're really optimistic and you think that the students will find commonality simply because they're teenagers or simply because they're, you know, all watching Harry Potter or they're, you know, there are these certain things that they can come together over. And then inevitably something is said, some small comment is made, and it just gets explosive. And you think, wow, this is not going well. And there were those moments where I really thought that that I had underestimated, I think, the intensity of the conflict and of students' emotions. But they come back together, and they were able to – I was so impressed with the students that when they got really involved in an intense conversation and there were a lot of tears and that kind of thing, that they would really pull themselves out of it. And it was great to have the Americans there, I would say, because it was a the Americans were blissfully ignorant and were able to act as a mediator in some sense because they didn't realize how loaded the situation was. So they could quickly grab a basketball and cool the conflict by just getting people doing something else. But yeah, it the students, by the time we were done and we had students who were had started off not even making eye contact, but by the end of the month they were, you know, giving each other a hug or trading email addresses and really exhibiting a commitment to continue their work. That was a really inspiring moment, I think.
Yeah, sure. I mean, at least basically it's created the basis for building something else, or to build on this and to take it to the next level, perhaps. And maybe people will, well, they'll open up a little bit to each other, hopefully.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. But it's interesting, you know, you look at this age group, and we're dealing with minors here. We're dealing with 16, 17-year-olds. And one of the recurring themes that a lot of the Americans actually touched on, and since the program have talked to me a lot about, is that these students are going to be going off to war, and regardless of these wonderful relationships that they've forged over the course of the program, they're still living in a very high conflict region, and there's a lot more that needs to be done. So, I mean, I'm optimistic. The program went really, really well. We're only halfway through, so we still have another exchange and a lot more online work to do, but yeah, they're also my optimism is definitely tempered by a realization that these are young people who are soon going to be on the front lines.
A lot of it, at least up until the stage where they met, was conducted online. I mean, I think it's probably very obvious why, especially for people in free geographic locations, why being online actually helps collaborative work. But what else do you think the online world and these new online tools offers to future, well, their citizens of their countries?
Anonymity. I think online, for the students who are involved, and I'll give you an example in a minute, but they're able to collaborate. They're able to talk about issues that they would otherwise not be able to if they were face-to-face, in the sense that they're not – they don't have the pressure of having to sort of put on that cloak of nationality and toe the party line and all that kind of stuff. They're just a screen name. And so they can be a lot more candid in what they – what's really on their mind and how they feel about certain topics. I think that there was some concern about just monitoring and people who were monitoring blogs and what the students were doing, but we, you know, dropped the last name so that the students weren't – you couldn't really trace the students because they didn't have, you know, their last names on their blogs. But nevertheless, that online world does offer them a chance to really get their voice out there, but not have a name or face behind it necessarily. And I think that's really important, especially for the Azerbaijanis.
It's kind of ironic. I mean, that wasn't really – I mean, thank you very much for that answer, but I was really thinking more about, you know, everyone is raving about Twitter and social media and the potential it offers people. But it was interesting for me to hear you unexpectedly answer about anonymity. It's especially strange because we have a situation where we have the presidents of the Republic of Armenia and Azerbaijan meeting up, getting on apparently very well when they meet up in Moscow or wherever it may be, trying to work out a peace deal, and yet we have people in their respective countries getting worried if anyone finds out that they're trying maybe to do the same thing. It's a bit of a bizarre situation when I hear that this situation arose.
Yeah. That is interesting. Yeah, and I mean, even in respect to the issue of the anonymity, and yeah, the leaders are talking, but God forbid that people actually do. You know, most of our students did not sign, most of the students' parents didn't sign release forms for photos to be used, or videos or things like that when they were here, so here in Vermont. So what that says to me is, yeah, these online tools, Twitter, Facebook, that kind of thing, where young people are able to get online and to talk candidly and not have their faces traced, their names traced, all that stuff, that is really a powerful tool for them to be vocal and out there and not necessarily held entirely responsible for what they're saying.
I'm a great advocate for using these new tools. I mean, I'm sitting in Yerevan and I can speak to people just like I'm speaking to you over Skype. No one can monitor it. I can keep in touch with people that I would never have been able to keep in touch with before. I think the argument for using social media is very, very definitely there. But how did the kids on the technical side of things, I mean, did they really take to the new technology well? I mean, was it almost like they just were able to use it immediately, or were there some problems with getting their heads around it?
Well, these are young people. These are digital natives. So they are so fluent with online technology that it is really just incredible to me. That said, I would say that that's probably true primarily of Armenians and U.S. students. They were seamless in transitioning to online technology. The Azerbaijanis, for obvious reasons, there's just not the kind of fluency, again, that in respect to those students and their use of online media. The connectivity isn't always there. There's a bit more monitoring and censorship. Obviously, there's a monopoly on their telecommunications, so it's easy for sites to be closed down and censored. So the students just haven't had that same kind of opportunity to really experiment with all that the internet has to offer, with all the Twitter and Facebook kinds of applications that are out there. But the U.S. students, absolutely. The Armenian students, absolutely. They really embraced it.
That's really, again, this is another unexpected answer, because in recent weeks we've had a very high-profile case involving bloggers in Azerbaijan.
Yes.
And these guys I've been following for very many months. And it's kind of ironic, because actually these 20-somethings were very good with their use of social media and online tools, probably more so than their counterparts in Armenia. Yet for these kids, it's totally the opposite way around. It would be interesting to discover why that is. why at this age they don't really have so much access to it, and why when you have a youth movement in Azerbaijan that basically used it better than any other youth movement in the entire region. It's very interesting.
Right.
And I don't know
Well, even a lot of the students, that happened with the bloggers being arrested. That happened while the students were here in Vermont. And for the most part, very few Azerbaijanis knew who they were or what was really going on. And partly just because they haven't been able to access the information that the bloggers were putting out there. Like I said, connectivity just isn't, at least for these students, and these students were from schools that had internet, you know, computer labs and that kind of thing, but nevertheless, they just didn't have the same kind of regular access to online tools that other students did.
Well, I mean, you had what, 30 students from each country, right?
Originally, we started off with 30 from each country, and then for the physical exchange, it was 10 students.
So, effectively, we had 90 blogs set up at the beginning of the program.
Yes.
So it
yes.
was actually kind of hard for me to monitor all of them. And but I did look at some of them, and I think I did a post for Global Voices, and it was about some of the concerns that the teenagers had. And it was remarkable to see, like you said, that their concerns are actually the same. The sort of things that bother them about the environment, about waste collection, about war, about lots of things. They were all the same. And I think that in itself was fascinating. And it was very good to be able to have that sort of information and to be able to contrast it and to think, actually, these kids are just, you know, one Armenian kid has exactly the same counterpart in Azerbaijan and vice versa. Their musical tastes are probably the same. What they like to do with weekends is probably the same. The films they like are probably the same. Their concerns are probably the same. So that was very interesting for me to see. And it would be nice to somehow build on that, I think.
I agree completely. It was so interesting to me because you're right. When I was reading the blogs, and it was tough to keep track as well, but when I was reading them, they were, they didn't have the last names on them. And so often I would look at them. If I was going quickly between blogs, you couldn't distinguish nationality if you were just sort of scanning them through like an RSS or whatever. And I found that really interesting. That said, when all the students came over and they were actually meeting face to face, it was interesting to me that they would quickly go to, but we're so different. And if we facilitated a couple group sessions and on the question of what makes us different, what are commonalities, that kind of thing, the students would quickly go to their differences. And they would say, oh, but we're so different. Oh, but, you know, we're from two different capital cities and all that kind of stuff. But they had a really hard time identifying the differences other than nationality and, of course, religion. But those big things, but in terms of the daily life, the preferences, the hobbies, the global concerns, they couldn't write them down. It was amazing.
I mean, is there anything else you'd like to say about the project and what your hopes are for it and what's in store for the .comers, I guess? So, I mean, what do you hope is in store for .com?
Well, all the students are going to continue their online work, continue blogging, and then in March and April, the American students will fly to Baku first and then to Yerevan, and then all 30 students will meet in Tbilisi, Georgia for a regional youth media conference. And that will include not just .comers, but students in other programs that are similar that deal with transparency in media and social media and those kinds of topics. So they'll meet there, and then we'll see what happens at that point. But it's very exciting.
Well, I wish you luck with it. And also I'd like to thank you very much for being interviewed and also letting the project operate openly online so that actually we could actually see what a blogger was writing and what another blogger in another country was writing. I think that in itself was very good and got a lot of us thinking as well. So thank you very much for that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.